Welcome to the Power Hour. I'm Adrienne Herbert, wellness coach, international speaker, and author. Each week, I speak to a variety of guests, from business founders to Olympic athletes, leading coaches, change makers, and innovators, to find out their daily habits, their rules to live by, and what motivates them to get up out of bed each day. Personally, I am on a mission to encourage, motivate, and inspire, so I hope that the Power Hour will help you to achieve your personal and professional goals. Welcome back to the Power Hour podcast. Today, I am joined by Julie Manano, couples therapist and author of Secure Love. Welcome to the podcast.
Thank you. It's so wonderful to be here.
I am so excited to have this conversation with you. I know that a lot of people will have a lot of questions when it comes to relationship advice and, of course, being an expert couples therapist. I'm sure that I think the thing about podcasting is that you can listen to it and the questions that you maybe have that other people have as well, hopefully, are some of the questions that I'm going to ask. And so you can just listen to it. Nobody else needs to necessarily know. And I think, I think everybody, whatever stage their relationship is in, will benefit from hearing from you today.
Everybody will benefit from relationship help. Yes. Absolutely. Especially this type of work.
So as an expert relationship therapist, for years, you've helped couples to improve their relationships. And today, you also have over 1 million people following you online. Mm-hmm. Your book, Secure Love, teaches us how to create a relationship that lasts a lifetime. So my first question for you is, who did you have in mind when you sat down to write this book?
I had in mind all the couples in the world that I cannot treat in my private practice.
Right.
Yeah, because yeah. I'm doing this work with couples. It's beautiful work. I'm seeing all of the success. I'm seeing my colleagues that, you know, are also doing this work have all this beautiful success. But if you really look at the numbers, most people don't have access to couples therapy or quality couples therapy. And that's really hard for me. You know, it's really hard for me to think of all the people that aren't getting help. So my goal was, hey, I'm going to sit down and I'm going to just sort of write out this whole process that I do because I don't see it out there anywhere else. There's a market for it. There's a need for it, I should say. And so that's what I did. I just kind of wrote it all out. And then, you know, it is this type of work I do, which is called emotionally focused therapy for couples. It's based on attachment theory, which people are really starting to become familiar with, which is amazing because attachment theory is really the closest science has come to explaining how relationships work. So I think it's just the timing is really good because people are already latching onto this and recognizing how powerful this information is. But then there's not a lot of really good advice out there, in my opinion, as to what to really do with that information. So
sure. Well, we're going to dive into all of this and what attachment styles and attachment, secure attachment is. But before that, one thing I had in mind when I was reading the book was, if you're in a relationship, then you're in a relationship with someone else. It doesn't just exist on its own. So if you're reading this book or if you read this book, do you think that the other person in the relationship also needs to read that book so that you can literally both be on the same page and have these conversations and kind of do the work together? Or is it enough for one person in a relationship to read the book and, you know, be able to make change within their relationship on their own?
Well, ideally, both partners are reading the book. I mean, that's the gold standard, right? They're on the same page. They're both working together to make improvements in their relationship. But that doesn't always happen, right? There's a lot of reasons that one partner might be resistant to relationship work or relationship advice. And all of those reasons are very good reasons. Nobody has, you know, resistance to this work without a really good reason. That doesn't mean that that's a good idea, you know, but so what we need to do is if, you know, let's say the first level would be if you have a partner that really isn't interested in reading the whole book, just read parts, you know, read parts and go through the exercises together. Sometimes we just have to kind of gradually introduce information that can be threatening to some people. And over time, it starts to shift. But I think, you know, if you have a partner that really, truly is resistant and isn't looking, you know, they're really kind of like, I don't want anything to do with that. I've seen too many people, you know, get divorced right after they have couples therapy or, you know, start reading these relationship books, and the next thing you know, all they're doing their entire life is talking about their relationship. So really the best way is to model what you're wanting from them by being that. And so that might look like, hey, you know, it makes a lot of sense to me that you don't want to kind of look at our relationship on a deeper level. You know, you have whatever your reasons are for that. You know, the information obviously isn't comfortable for you, and I can respect that. At the same time, you know, I really want to feel closer, and this is really important to me to kind of figure out some ways that we can feel closer and fight less. And by approaching it in that way, instead of approaching it as we have to read this together, or you don't want to work on the relationship. I mean, that's the best way to really push them away from the work. And so what I call is present this information in a way that is creating invitations instead of accusations. And then as you start to become more of that emotionally safe presence in the relationship, it really can, you know, do wonders for the relationship. And really the work is about doing that anyway, whether your partner is sort of on board with that or not. And what I've seen is that people who really are able to commit to that, they do start creating safety. And safety is what really inspires self-reflection. If we're not communicating in a safe way, you know, people's protections just go up. They just, that, and that's natural. You know, if we're in a situation that doesn't feel emotionally safe, it's natural to start getting defensive and protective. So when you can shift into, hey, I get you, I see you, which is really the crux of this work, people really do start to kind of, and another thing is if you're changing your parts and you're not going into those, you know, whatever, shutdowns or protests, then it kind of does put someone in a position, you know, if you're not sort of like, quote unquote, behaving badly anymore, it really does put people in a position to have to kind of look at their self. So, yeah.
So for anyone who isn't familiar with the concept of secure attachment or attachment styles, can you explain for the listeners, I suppose, how would you describe the typical characteristics of a relationship where both partners have secure attachment style?
Sure. So the gold standard is a secure attachment. And what we're looking for is partners who are able to communicate with each other in a way that sends these messages that you matter to me, you're important to me, I'm here for you. When you really need me, I'm going to be here for you. I value you. I appreciate you. I respect you. Your needs matter to me. And so securely attached partners are just, they're good at doing that. They grew up in homes where that was the way they were communicated to. Even, you know, if we had some sort of problem with behavior, we can have a problem with the way someone is behaving and still reach them and talk to them in a way that is emotionally safe. And that emotional safety kind of really ties into what I'm saying about, you know, we need to get these messages which are tied into attachment needs, right? An attachment need is, this is the need that I have, need to be met in order to feel safe and close to you. And so securely attached, if you really just boil it down, you know, they're really good at communicating really clearly in a safe way, and they can get through their everyday problems together safely, and they're really able to get down into their own vulnerability when they're triggered instead of just yelling or shutting down and all these things that don't work. They're really able to say, you know what, I'm overwhelmed right now. I'm scared. I feel, you know, right now is one of those moments where I feel kind of alone.
And so in contrast to that, how would you typically describe, I suppose, a relationship that doesn't have that secure attachment style, and I suppose the actions and the behaviors, because I think often people try to, you know, they think if for example they're in a loving relationship and they, you know, oh, the person's very loving and and maybe they know that, and but they're still, I'm sure, you know, no relationship is perfect,
sure,
but they still might have these like really difficult and dysfunctional relationships, but just say, oh, but we love each other, so that's just how it is.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's really easy to feel a sense of love for someone without doing the verb part of love. You know, because we can intuitively know, I know my partner loves me. But still, we're having all of these moments where we're communicating to each other in these awful ways that really aren't directly communicating love. Mm. And attachment needs being met. And so if you're having enough moments of these triggered, you know, what I call negative cycles that we'll talk about later, you really are in these moments, your nervous system really isn't feeling loved. Right. And so if you have enough of those moments, they start to kind of choke out and they can really, for really distressed couples, start to choke out the moments when they actually do know they're loved. I mean, the bigger climate. So, you know, I think we really need to separate the feeling love from the verb loved. And it doesn't matter how much you really know someone loves you. If you're communicating, if you're missing the verb, right, it is going to strain your relationship. And really, I think what I'm here to do is get the verb on board so the feeling gets even more powerful and consistent.
And every relationship has challenges sometimes, no matter how good it is. And it mm-hmm. requires effort to maintain and to improve things. So in your opinion, Julie, what typically mistakes do people make when they are actively trying to improve their relationships?
Okay, well, so one of the, you know, basis of the type of work I do, which is emotionally focused therapy for couples, is this concept of these negative cycles that we'll get into in a minute. And 100% the answer to your question is they go about the relationship change conversation in a negative cycle. Okay. So they go about it with this protesty, you never do this, you always do that, look, you don't care, or even, look, I'm really communicating clearly to you what my needs are, and look, at you're not getting it right, and I'm not getting responded to in the right way. And so we could just switch out relationship conversation with any other topic, parenting or money. And it's if that pattern is being developed around relationship help, it's not going to get anyone anywhere, because when you're in a negative cycle, you're actually fighting for your relationship needs to be met. You're fighting to know that you matter. You're fighting to know that your partner values you. And so it's just creating the opposite effect, really,
than what they want. Yeah. So, okay, let's go deeper on this then, the negative cycles, because I think every couple probably can remember a time where they're like, oh my gosh, we've had this conversation before. Mm-hmm. Maybe we've had this disagreement or this argument before. Maybe there's certain topics now that they just avoid altogether because they go, sure, you know what? Anytime we talk about X, Y, and Z, it never goes well. The conversation, you know, doesn't go well. Or like you said, one person feels like they're not listened to, or mm-hmm. the other person kind of maybe thinks they know what their other partner's going to say. You know, I'm thinking about relationships where people have been together for a long time, so maybe more than 10 or 15
Absolutely.
years, and they start to go, I know what she's gonna say, or oh, he always does this, or exactly that. So yeah, let's get into that. Why, I suppose, because we all know that it doesn't have a good outcome, so why do we continue those negative cycles? How can we mm-hmm. break them?
Well, the short answer is we don't know what else to do. Mm-hmm. You know, we're scrambling around, we're feeling afraid, we're feeling alone, our attachment needs aren't being met in these moments, we're not feeling heard, we're not feeling validated, we're not knowing our needs matter, you know, we're not feeling appreciated for what we do get right, and then we're feeling scared because we don't know how to do it. So we have this other layer, and, you know, if you don't have an alternative, you have an urge to get through the conversation and resolve it, but you don't have the skills to do it. And so what I'm coming in to do is say, hey, let me help you, you know, when you're talking about, let's say, money or where to have dinner, or anything that, you know, is a disagreement, disagreements are like the opening to the negative cycle, right? Or any kind of conflict. And so I'm here to say, hey, let's dive underneath the conversation about money, or the conversation about where we're going to live, or conversation about how we navigate our in-laws. And let's get these attachment needs on board while we're speaking to each other about this. So we don't go into these protections, right? Where we're protesting to be heard. And in the process of protesting, we're leaving our partner feeling beat down or overly criticized or not safe. And then they're trying to protect themselves or trying to protect the relationship from conflict. And so then they start shutting down and they start putting up their walls, we're getting really defensive. And then now they're sending the message to the first part, hey, I'm leaving you alone with this. I'm abandoning you. Mm-hmm. And I'm going in and cleaning up that piece of it, you know, below the surface, so that they don't have to keep having the same conversation about money. Why? Because they now know how to be successful. They're learning how to be successful. Hey, we can connect emotionally. We can communicate in a way that's safe for us. And that doesn't make the conversation entirely comfortable, you know, when people see things differently. But it does start to, you know, when people feel emotionally safe, they definitely just become more flexible in general.
Okay.
And so it can help with just the disagreement in and of itself. But, you know, if we want partners to really get resolution to a problem, it has to be done with emotional safety.
Yeah.
And so I'm going in and I'm not talking to my clients about their surface level problems. I'm teaching them how to talk about those surface level problems so they don't go into negative cycles.
Well, that's what I was thinking, because those examples that you gave, maybe it's like talking about money or talking about in-laws, or, you know, they can be quite, you know, they're serious or big or things that, you know, but I think some of the negative cycles, you know, there's an example that you give in the book about, you know, someone leaves the key in the wrong place. And then she's like, well, it's not, you know, it's those things where someone will say, well, I always do this thing and I've asked you not to do it.
Yes.
Or why do you, and then you're like, seriously, are we going to have an argument over a key or over a pair of shoes? Or, but I think that point you made then around, what are you really arguing about? You know, is it actually the key and the fact, or is it the, I suppose, the feeling that the other person is like, well, if I've asked you to do something 10 times and you don't, maybe that means that actually you just don't care what I think, or
absolutely,
you just,
yeah,
you know, just respectful, or those kind of things. And I think that's it, again, it seems like a common thing and people joke about it in, you know, about the dishwasher or about the washing or whatever, when really they're like, that is not the problem. They're like, that was just the catalyst, but the real problem is something totally different. So how can people, I guess, in that
kind
moment
of the difference?
Well, yeah, but in the moment, actually say or figure out, you know what, yes, we're arguing about washing, but how can couples start to, I suppose, recognize that that washing isn't the problem?
Well, first of all, if they're in a fight, they're feeling escalated, their bodies are starting to feel, you know, really uncomfortable or shut down or kind of numb, they are always talking about the relationship. If they're in a, if you're in a fight, period, there's relationship issues happening. So we can just go ahead and assume that any kind of fight or argument is, we're trying to reach each other. We're not able right now to really stay regulated with this topic because our relationship doesn't even feel safe. That's the scariest thing in the world when you really boil it down. And then once that's kind of cleared up, then it becomes a thing about, well, the keys probably really don't matter. They were just a stand-in. Maybe, you know, finances do matter, right? Feeling safe around finances is really important. Parenting choices are really important. And so we need to address those big issues that can actually be a problem, but we have to deal with the root problem before we get to anything else on the surface, whether it's inconsequential or not.
Yeah. And you've worked with so many couples, Julie. So for anyone listening who's thinking, oh my gosh, this is me, and, you know, maybe they're feeling a bit, I don't know, exasperated with their relationship and thinking, you know what, I've tried to talk to them before, or, you know, I suppose, a little bit of optimism, I suppose. How many couples have you seen who've gone from like zero and actually worked together and worked their way back to improving the relationship to being this, you know, maybe even better than it was before they started therapy?
All of them end up better. You know, I think any couple out there who gets really high quality couples therapy is going to end up better, because there's always higher levels of growth to this work. Nobody ever gets to the end, you know, of their growth process. And that's true with relationships. And so the statistics on the type of work that I do, emotionally focused therapy for couples, is that 90% of the couples we treat, you know, and this is when it's done well, right? You know, you always have to consider a modality is only as good as the therapist doing the modality. But 90% of the couples, even with a little bit of EFT, will see some improvement. 75% will go from insecure to secure. And, you know, honestly, that's probably what I see in my practice. It's probably pretty accurate. Those are, you know, studies that have been done, research that's been done. But that pretty much parallels my experience, that everybody from this work, learning to be more vulnerable, learning to really talk more directly about what the real problem is going to improve.
Mm. I think that's really great to highlight that and for people to mm-hmm. hear that, because, you know, 75% or 90%, you know, that's a lot. That's a high number.
Yes.
It's
yes.
more than not. And I think sometimes people's perception of couples therapy is that, oh my gosh, if you go into couples therapy, then, you know, like you said mm-hmm. before, you must be getting divorced, or you must be at the end of your relationship. It's the last, mm-hmm. last final straw, and your relationship is so terrible that you're going to couples therapy. Whereas actually, I think if people knew that stat, that 75% of couples who do couples therapy come out the other side still together and actually better than before, I think that might change people's minds about it.
I need to put a caveat to that.
Okay.
Because we're not talking about all couples therapy. We're mm-hmm. talking about this specific kind of couples therapy.
Okay.
Emotionally focused therapy for couples is the gold standard research-based therapy. It has a lot of evidence backing. I believe that there are a lot of couples therapists out there that aren't working from an attachment perspective. That are probably, you know, I hate to sound judgmental, but I think a lot of the time couples therapy can make the problem worse mm. because what happens is that couples will start going into negative cycles in the therapy.
Sure.
And if the couples therapist isn't really ready for that and isn't ready to recognize all this attachment energy that's flying around, and they're really just trying to teach communication skills and leave it at that, what's happening in the room is the problem itself is just being reinforced.
Mm. And or it's just so, like a mediation maybe, where you've got a third party
exactly.
that's kind of saying, you know,
yeah,
yeah, mediating as
and
opposed
this is
to...
not, nothing about what I do is mediating. Mm-hmm. And so I think it really is important that, you know, in the field is really moving into that direction. Mm-hmm. And so I think it is crucial, the quality of the work.
Yeah.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Okay, well, let's talk about language and scripts a little bit.
Great.
Because I loved that. When I got to that part of the book, I was like, oh, okay, this is so powerful. I think often people have, maybe in their mind, they're not able to articulate exactly what it is that, mm-hmm. you know, how they want to say it or if they should say it at all. So I think it's really useful. Why did you, yeah, I suppose, why mm-hmm. did you include language and scripts in the book? And is that something that you use with your clients face-to-face as well?
I absolutely use this with my clients at the beginning of the work. And then as we progress further into the therapy, those words start to become their own. But at the beginning, and this is part of keeping couples out of their negative cycles, is at the beginning, I'm doing a lot of processing with one partner at a time to really understand, hey, in this one triggered moment, let's talk about what was really going on with you. Let's talk about what was happening in your body. People just have no awareness, you know, of what's really happening with them when they start yelling or when they start shutting down. And so I'm really getting down to, in as we go, the deepest, I mean, we all have these deep, insecure views of ourselves. I mean, we all have so much confidence, right? There's so many parts of our lives that so many people have confidence, they feel safe, they feel good, but we all also have these little insecure voices. And those are often what are driving the car, right? And so I'm helping them get down to that and communicate from that place. Once we find it, you know, I don't randomly give them these words. We find the words. And then I have them share. And usually their partner responds very positively to hearing, you know, when you see me shut down, what's really going on is I'm overwhelmed. I feel stuck. I don't know what to do. I'm afraid I'm going to push you away no matter what I say. And their partner's just melting because their partner had no idea. What they see is, you don't care about me. You just don't even care about, you know, working here with me. We're not a team. And so the scripts in the book are really, you know, when we go into tough conversations with our partner, or really anyone, I mean, so many people grew up in homes where you had to fight for your voice to be heard. You had to fight for your needs to be met, or you just gave up and didn't fight at all. Mm. And those are two different extremes. One is being too consumed with what's going on with you and by what's going on inside of your body. And the other one is just kind of almost being too consumed with not fighting or just what the other person wants, just say whatever they want to hear, right? And so with these scripts, I'm really doing this kind of formula of, instead of going into a difficult conversation with, here's what I need, here's what's happening for me, it's let's put one foot in your partner and keep one foot in yourself. And let's communicate from both a place of self-need and a place of empathy and understanding for your partner. And that just creates a tremendous amount of safety. So every script that I've put in the book is to help people, you know, that as a concept is one thing, but when we can actually see that concept in words, it really comes alive. And so many people are hearing all of these concepts in life, but they're not, you know, getting the exact words to help practice putting it. You know, when you're in a tough moment and your nervous system's flared, I mean, I'm sure you can relate. Mm-hmm. You didn't grow up with these words, you know, and so.
Yeah, it takes practice, doesn't it? And I think sometimes as well, even if it's the first time, people feel nervous, you know, thinking, oh gosh, I'm going to say this. And it doesn't, maybe it's not, like you said, their words. And it maybe feels a little bit like, oh, this doesn't feel like I would say it like this, but you know, I'm just going to try. And I think being okay with that and being okay with actually, if you don't always get the response that you want, or maybe sometimes you don't react and respond the way you want,
but
you have to just keep kind of trying again and again and try and, I think, be open to be self-reflective and be open to how much work can you do. Because often I think this is definitely what I've heard in a lot of the stuff I've listened to around relationship therapy and looked at, is it's always like most people, typically, you tell me, come to the session and go, it's that person, it's that
Absolutely.
Person, it's that person. So they need to do this and they need to change and they never listen and they never go, I don't do those things either. So I think we need to start from with the language and the scripts about thinking, how would you want someone to talk to you about this, as opposed to just like, they need to listen to me more and the other person needs to change
just,
and I'm good.
Nobody's getting anywhere. Walls are going up. Nobody's feeling heard. Nobody's feeling understood. But to your point about, you know, nervous, that's the work. Mm-hmm. The work is the nervous, right? And the way that is communicated, that's kind of the first layer, which is, I care so much about this relationship and I care so much about your feelings and I care so much about my needs being met too, so we can feel safe and close, that I'm really trying to put these new words into practice and I'm feeling really nervous about it. Yeah. You know, I'm feeling really vulnerable. And if you lead with that, that is going to, you know, for most couples, it's going to melt hearts. Yeah. And then that paves the way to making the scripts even more effective.
Yeah. Well, thank you for sharing those, because I think that it's super useful to have the words and the language to communicate and to express how you feel. Mm-hmm. So the focus of the book and this conversation, I suppose, has been romantic relationships. So we're talking about your partner. But how can understanding more about your own attachment style, your behavior, how can that maybe help you to improve other relationships in your life? So how you parent your kids or showing up for your friends or relationships with your own parents?
Yeah, well, I mean, let's just start with parenting kids. I mean, it's transformative. You know, this work has been not just transformative for my relationship with my husband, but with my kids, just knowing how to really, truly be there for them as an emotional support. You know, we have a mental health crisis, you know, in the U.S., here in Britain, but especially with younger kids, it's just becoming, you know, far more prevalent than it has ever been. And it's, the kids are just alone, you know, they're emotionally alone, whether they're surrounded by a whole classroom of kids, because we don't know how to talk about these deeper parts. And if we don't know how to talk about them, we don't know how to get help with them. We don't know. And so, you know, just the child part is really something I feel really passionate about. But, you know, just from the perspective of someone who's been doing this personal work for a long time, I mean, it's only improved all of my relationships because it has improved my own self-awareness. And so when I'm really more aware of what's happening inside of me, and when my insecurities might be flaring up and I want to just kind of act on that with people pleasing or, you know, shutting down or judging or whatever, I can kind of catch that and I can show up because of the self-awareness of this work. I can show up as my best self more often. And that tends to help me connect with people, whether they're friends or, you know, you and I just met, but I feel a lovely connection with you. And so,
Yeah, and I think also, Len, you said then about recognizing it, it doesn't mean that you don't do it anymore, but you you know, and that point, like you said, of like, okay, I can recognize sometimes and go, you know what, I was really defensive. And I know that there's certain topics that I am defensive about, and I know why, because as you said, self-awareness, I've done the work, but I was defensive and I can apologize and say,
absolutely.
You know what, it doesn't mean it doesn't happen. But I think knowing, and I think that's probably really refreshing as a friend or a partner to hear that, for someone to come back to you and go, you know what, yesterday, I'm sorry. You know,
right, because it shows that apology shows I care about your feelings. Mm-hmm. I mean, the rupture and repair process is the growth. You know, we really don't grow without messing up.
Yeah.
So we have to mess up. And, you know, it's almost like as you grow, your mess ups just keep getting healthier. You know, I guess you're only as grown as the quality of your mess ups.
Okay.
But you're never not messing up. Yeah. I mean, I grew up in a home where I got some messages enough of the time, just, you know, for whatever reason, that, you know, I was kind of like a bad person. It's, you know, there's a lot of backstory there, but like selfish, you know,
right.
I mean, a lot of us get these messages. If you have your own needs or whatever, then you're just kind of a selfish person. And I got a lot of praise for being, you know, doing well in school.
Mm-hmm.
And so those are my two sensitive areas. If I get that triggered, that someone, you know, if I get the message they don't think I'm smart, or they don't, you know, then that goes to I'm not being seen. You know, that's in my you know, primitive mind, like that's my identity.
Yeah.
It's really not.
Yeah.
But because I got those messages growing up so much. And then if I get the message from someone that maybe they're seeing me as bad or selfish, I mean, it just goes right to that core. And that's when I'm gonna, you know, lash out, or my walls are gonna go up. And so just having that recognition that I can kind of feel my body in triggered moments and go, okay, this is that moment where that little insecure piece is talking. But sometimes the insecure piece wins.
Yeah.
And then
yeah.
What do? You repair.
Yeah.
Or you never see the person again for whatever reason. You don't really know them, and you just like forgive yourself, you know.
Yeah. And as you said, it's like continuation, isn't it? It's continuous work, doing the work.
Absolutely.
Okay, well, let's talk a little bit about the Power Hour, of course. So the
yes.
first hour of every day. I love asking people this question and finding out what they do, what they include, what they avoid. And I'm kind of, for you, Julie, I'm kind of going to break this into two parts. So firstly, I would love to know about your Power Hour, if you have one, what you typically include and what the first hour of your day looks like.
Okay, so I love the first hour of my day. I mean, just absolutely love it. I wake up, I make my coffee, nobody's awake.
Because you have six kids.
I have six
we
kids.
We haven't mentioned the fact you have six kids.
I have six kids, 22 down to 12. My son moved out a few months ago. So up until then, it was, you know, full packed out house. And so as much as I love my kids and my husband, I love being alone in the morning. So get up, make coffee, piddle around, mostly just maybe do some work, writing or whatever, and just not have any distractions. So that is my sacred, absolutely sacred time. And my Power Hour is like an hour and a half.
Mm-hmm. Cool.
Yeah.
Is it early?
Yeah. Like, could be like anywhere from 5:30 to 6:30. And, you know, sometimes it's less if I'm get up a little bit later or whatever. My kids have something going on. But I always, somehow I always get a power 45 minutes to an hour and a half.
Great. Well, this leads me on to the second part, because normally I just ask people, what's their first hour like? And that's it. But this got me thinking again when I was reading the book. I, like you, my Power Hour is typically solitude. And it's like, okay, this is my hour. This is my time. Like you said, not the whole being selfish. I'm like, wow, you know, radical. Take a whole hour for yourself.
Absolutely.
And the rest of the day, you know, your time, your effort, your energy, your attention is probably, you know, being given or taken by someone else. So then it got me thinking. I was like, oh, you know, actually, what about your partner's needs? Like, what if they're the kind of person who, you know, they would love to do something with you in the morning, whether that's, you know, enjoying a coffee together in bed, or whether that's, you know, coming with you on your morning run, or, you know, how much is it okay for you to kind of like ring fence the Power Hour and be like, this is mine? And how much of us should we be thinking, actually, you know, prioritizing the relationship and the partner, like, let's share the Power Hour and do this together.
Well, it's hard to say because everybody is different and has different wants and needs. But
I know what I want you to say.
I think the power hour should be yours to do whatever you want. If you want your partner in it, by all means, have them in it. But I can't even imagine a life where I didn't have an hour a day to myself. Yeah. Like, that sounds so horrible that it's hard to advise never have an hour to yourself.
Yeah, yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, yeah. I think the beauty of secure attachment is that we actually feel more independent, in a healthier way. You know, it's people who have a secure attachment, they tend to go out in the world and have other things going on in their lives because they feel safe in their relationship. Mm. You know, there's a balance there. They're not completely disconnected from their relationship either. So, yeah, I mean, my husband and I are both really good at what I call parallel play, which is what kids do when they're kind of in the same room and they're playing with different toys, but the presence is just feels comforting and safe. So one of my favorite things is when my husband and I are both home, but we're doing different things and we just kind of check in with each other here and there. Yeah. And
I can relate because I do a lot of work at home with my husband. Mm-hmm. So we both work together, parent together, you know, we train for races together. So we do a lot of things together. But therefore, I feel like even more so my power hour. And also the kids, you know, you feel like I love the kids.
Yes.
And you feel like, oh, I'm so grateful and I'm so lucky. But I still want to have an hour where I just shut the door and I'm like, it's power hour. And they all know, you know, it's been such a long time. Yeah. It's like, oh, it's power hour,
right,
or Pilates.
It's power hour.
You know?
I love it. I told you before we talked, I didn't know that I was doing power hour. But now I have this beautiful word for it, a title for it. So my kids are going to be like, power. And now mom has a new phrase, you know, another new
power
phrase.
Yes.
Right.
Yes. Well, thank you so much for joining us. Secure Love, the book is out now here in the UK.
Yeah.
Is it available on Audible?
It is, and I recorded it.
Ah, great. Yeah. Well, if you've enjoyed this conversation, then I'm sure you're going to enjoy listening to it on Audible. So either way, make sure you get a copy and maybe share it with someone else as well. Thank you so much for joining us.
You are very welcome.
As always, I'll be back next week with another episode. Thank you, Julie.
You're welcome. Thanks for having me.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.